Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Thursday, August 24th, 2023. Can you believe how fast this year is going? You know, I don't want to take a second away from my guests that I've got. I just want to say this. Of all the people that I have the utmost respect for, I could probably count them on one hand. And this gentleman ranks right up there. Michael Yon. Y-O-N, just in case. And by the way, all the links to his website and everything, his Twitter account, social media accounts, will be contained at HagmanPI.com. Just open the description box and you'll see it. And of course, we're on Global Star Satellite Radio Network, as well as Spreaker, all the audio platforms, minus one. I think we got banned off one, which, you know, well. And Rumble and Brighteon. So please subscribe to us on Rumble and Brighteon if you haven't done so already. Michael Yon did a fantastic job yesterday, along with Ann Vandersteel. Ann Vandersteel, tremendous young lady. I have a lot of respect for her as well. But both of them, if you didn't catch them on InfoWars, go back and watch that. I'll put a link in the program description box to Alex Jones. Just a fantastic platform. And Alex, of course, a friend of mine, friend of the show. But Michael Yon, at age 19, folks, I don't know how many of you know this, he successfully completed Green Beret training, which is why he could probably kill you with a napkin if he wanted to, but he doesn't really want to. His Green Beret experience taught him the art of observing and surviving in the most dangerous environments. This is from his website now. Combining his skills as a writer, tremendous photographer, and with the encouragement of fellow veterans, Michael began his correspondent career by traveling to Iraq in December of 2004. And since that time, he's been all over the world, 80 countries, from China to Iraq to, my goodness, to countries you probably never even heard of. But he's been on the front lines. And I love the mission statement on his website. Combat is one form of confrontation. I choose another way. That's a quote from Michael Yon. And he writes this, and I'm going to be real quick about this. We seek the truth in chaos. Isn't that a true statement, folks? We seek the truth in chaos. When Michael embeds with the people on the front lines, and pardon me for looking away from the camera, he gains critical insights into complex conflicts. With your support, and this is key, okay? Now, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. Out of the people I do support, I'm going to support Michael Yon, and I would urge you to do the same. But with your support, he conveys those insights back to you. Be a part of the community that values, follows, and shares this comprehensive search for truth. And folks, your financial support is key to skirting the information gatekeepers. And I can't stress that enough. So please go to michaelyon.com, Y-O-N, and select a payment platform and donate generously. He is doing God's work out there, as well as, of course, Steve Quayle, good friend of mine, like a brother. In fact, I consider him a brother. Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com, and the man behind the private intelligence briefings. I think they're critically important. If you don't have them, get them. It's the private briefings. Know what happens before it happens. The truth about what's really going on. And of course, it's really valuable. So both two men I admire with extreme admiration. And by the way, I'm very humbled and honored to have Mr. Yon and Mr. Quayle on with me. Steve, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can bring Mr. Yon on.
Well, thank you, Doug. And it's a blessing for me to have Michael on because, again, it's different in talking to people that have second and third-hand knowledge and friend of friends. But what Michael does is he's on the front lines. And the two most critical issues that affect every American is the absolute infiltration of foreign armies into this country, staging out of Mexico and the Darien Gap. And Michael's, there's nobody who embeds better than he does. And we're going to turn him loose today, ladies and gentlemen, because the child trafficking of 860,000 children under the Biden crime cartel and the whole Washington, D.C. perverted political class is off the record. And any nation that will not defend the life of their children is over. And it's my contention, and Michael's going to give you, and we told him, go for it. We've got 90 minutes. But I believe it is critical that everybody gets involved in this. If you can't go down to the Darien Gap, or if you can't grasp the amount of voluminous data that's coming in, you can listen to Michael Young. Michael, nice to meet you. Nice to interview you, and go for it. Because, again, what you have to say is what's important.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's a great honor to come on. In fact, I just was testifying with the Idaho Senate. That's why I was a little bit, my schedule's a little off today. Luckily, it was online. Now, everybody is watching this. If you've got a map out or if you've got a map handy, please put it in front of you because I'll be talking about a lot of things today and the map can be handy. Right now, you know, I'm in Texas. I'm in Austin. And I've been down on the border of the Texas-Mexican side this time. I've been all across this border from all the way from Boca Chica, SpaceX, to San Diego, much of that on the Mexican side and the U.S. side. And also, I look at the border issues, the weaponized migration issues in places like Colombia, Panama, Tapachula, Mexico, which is the southernmost city in Mexico, sort of like their El Paso. I'm looking at these things in Morocco and Lithuania and Greece and Netherlands is under direct attack. And there's a global, let's skip above the details for a moment and look at what's happening globally. Globally, the biggest players, the undercurrents of this are World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party. There are other currents. There are many other currents, but the main currents are the consanguination of the Chinese Communist Party and the World Economic Forum. They have annual meetings in places like Davos, Switzerland, and also in China and other places, right? So the Chinese Communist Party and the World Economic Forum, they have both short-term and medium-term goals that overlap. And those goals include destabilizing countries like the United States, Japan, Netherlands, all of Europe, actually, but Netherlands is key for destabilizing Europe. We'll get back to that. Panama, of course. I was just on the phone with somebody in regard to Panama, returning to Panama. The Darien Gap down there is being overwhelmed right now with a flood of weaponized migrants coming in. When I say weaponized, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're carrying weapons. It means that they're just coming, right? And they're coming in huge numbers. And into the United States daily, at least 10,000 per day. Per day. I didn't say per month or per week. At least 10,000 per day. Nobody actually knows the true numbers. Like that number is highly defensible, but nobody knows. Border Patrol doesn't know. Department of Homeland Security just doesn't know because many of the people coming in are coming in undetected. Many are coming in through the Canadian border. Actually, a lot are coming up on the Florida beaches now again. For instance, Chinese are buying boats and renting boats in Bahamas and coming up to Florida, right? In fact, we intercepted one Chinese, we call him Chai Ninja, earlier this year as he came through the Darien Gap in Panama, who had recounted a story about actually buying a boat from a Scotsman in Bahamas and trying to get to Florida. He said he ran out of gas. He said he was with his father, quote unquote father, and that the U.S. Coast Guard picked him up. He was deported back to the Bahamas. And interestingly, the Coast Guard confirmed that he did get picked up. This same guy did get picked up. So that story actually checked out. So after this, the guy we call Chai Ninja was picked up by the Coast Guard and then somehow deported back to the Bahamas. The Bahamas was deporting him back to China. His connection flight was through Cuba. And in Cuba, he told us, and he told us in Panama, that he changed his flight to Quito, Ecuador, right? So instead of returning to China, he went to Quito, Ecuador. And in Quito, he got on a bus and drove for 2 days to Nicoclí, Colombia. That's a that story checks out. There's about a 50-hour drive from Quito to Nicoclí, and this happens every day by Chinese. Many of the Chinese that are coming through the Darien Gap go to Quito first. So he took that bus ride. He went to Quito, and then he took a boat to Copacabana, Colombia. I've taken the same boat myself on my own look-sees, so that when I'm talking with people like this, I know exactly what they're talking about and know if they're telling the truth or not. So he made it to Copacabana, and then he talked about how he got through the Darien Gap, which was all, it sounded truthful to me because I'm quite familiar with the entire process. And then that's where I and my team intercepted him coming out of the jungle on the Panama side. We wait late at night often on the Panama side of the jungle, the Darien Gap, because when you talk with people, if you're questioning people, they talk more at night, right? Especially people will talk more when they're alone at night or just one or two people. And he was hungry. He was tired. He was itching. That part of the jungle, there's this bug called morungai. And those morungai, I've had them. They're terrible. You itch like, you know, it's a terrible experience. So he came out. He was itching very badly from the Embra Indians call them morungai. I don't know what the Spanish word is. And but these bugs are, he was scratching and itching. And he was hungry, and we got him some food, and he talked for an hour and a half. And he talked about how, and his English was perfect. It sounded like he had gone through the Chinese language school. I went to the military language school, Defense Language Institute, where I learned to speak German, right? But they're not teaching us to be spies when we go through that school. They're just teaching us to speak German or Spanish or Korean or whatever, right? I went for German. But there's other language schools where people learn how to, they learn a lot more. Like the Chinese have a language school that they send their general staff through. The Chinese have three main intelligence organizations we need to be concerned about. One is called MSS, Ministry of State Security. That's like their CIA, right? And then they've got the public security. Those are the ones who set up like that's like their FBI. They're the ones that set up the police stations like in New York and Dublin. I went to their police station in Dublin, by the way. They had a sign right on the road. You know, the day after we went there and reported on it, they took the sign down. But I went to the one in London, and that they didn't even have a sign on that one. But you hit the buzzer and say, you know, ni hao, and they're like, ni hao. You know, they start speaking Mandarin back to you. Anyway, interesting. These police stations are all over the place, including Panama City. So the three main intelligence organizations we need to be concerned about are the MSF, Ministry of State Security. That's like their CIA. The public security, those are those police stations. They're like sort of like their FBI. And then there's the general staff of the PLA, right? And those are the ones that have this language school that teach spies, right? And these are well-trained spies. For instance, his language skills were very high. I mean, he could have passed for being, he had a slight accent. People who've seen some of the video and audio say they don't detect any accent at all. I do detect an accent, but it's quite good. And he could have passed for being in the United States for 20 years easily because he had the body language down. He had the, you know, he was talking about things that basically when you go to this language school, you're watching Gilligan's Island and that sort of thing. They will assign a girlfriend to you, that sort of thing. You'll know a lot about the culture. You'll know a lot more than just learning the language. And so he had those skills at a high level, but he was leaking. Some people will say that spies will never tell you who they are, but those are people that don't know anything about spies, because actually sometimes they do. If they get in an emotional state, he got very angry at one point, which was great, although he seemed a little dangerous. But when they get in that emotional state, if you can calm them down, they'll keep talking. He was hungry. He was itching. He was tired from coming through the Darien Gap. He talked for an hour and a half. He was heading to the United States. Anyway, everything about him checked out. We checked out a great deal about him. Those are the types of people coming through the Darien Gap. We have huge numbers of Chinese coming through the Darien Gap right now in Panama. Mayorkas went down there in April of 2022. I was down in the Darien Gap in Panama. It's an incredible place. And I was getting ready to fly up to Arizona to take some congressmen, like Congressman Tom Tiffany from Wisconsin. I had just taken him. I had taken him to Darien Gap before, by the way, him and Congressman one from Utah, Burgess Owens, took him down into the Darien Gap. Wow, I can't believe they went down there. No security. Those guys got cuts, man. We took them way out into the jungle, like Apocalypse Now jungle, and showed them exactly what's going on. But so I was talking with Tom Tiffany. I was down in the Darien Gap again. They were up in Arizona, and I said, listen, I'll be up there soon to, you know, do some Arizona stuff on the border. And then I got the tip that that the Mayorkas is coming down, Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas is coming down to Panama. So I said, hold on, let's cancel the Arizona thing. And I predicted where he, I thought if he comes to Panama, he might come to Darien by helicopter. I thought that that's what he would probably do. So I waited in one place for 4 days, and he did. So in April of 2022, three Blackhawks came and landed right in front of me. And I was like, well, like the, here it is, the pumpkin patch, the great pumpkin has landed. And he went right into the camp where I thought he might go, and I put a drone over him, and I droned as they were, as Mayorkas was, he went right by me. He went within like 15 feet of me, right? So there he goes with his heavy security and whatnot. And I, and what he was doing is expanding the camp. This is April of 2022. Keep that date in your mind. He went back down in April of 2023. I went down in advance of him this time, and I was there waiting again. And this time, also, if you look online, you'll see I put drone footage of April of 2022 and April of 2023. And look how much that camp has expanded. That's called camp. That's called San Vicente Camp in Darien Province. San Vicente Camp, right? Look it up. San Vicente, and look up my name. Look up the before and after pictures. Now, as of yesterday, that camp is filled with Chinese. That camp, San Vicente Camp, is filled with Chinese. That's where we plucked off Chai Ninja, and he talked with us. He was heading to that camp. Did we just develop a camp for the Chinese? I mean, this is over the top. So we've got at least 2,500 people coming in per day through the gap right now. At least 200 of those are Chinese. That's not all the Chinese that are coming through. And these are mostly military-age males. By the way, earlier this year, six military-age males were in that camp. There's a hotel beside it called the Tenose Hotel, right? And I've stayed months in that hotel. It's like a one-star hotel. I call it a five-star one-star because at least it's clean. And it's got a shower that's not no hot water, but it's a five-star one-star. I've spent months there down when I'm in the Darien. And now the Chinese are filling up that hotel, right? Because it's right beside the San Vicente camp, which is right on Highway 1, right? Highway 1 is the highway that goes all the way from the end of the Darien. I mean, that's where it starts in the Darien Gap. And get, where that highway begins is the end of the Darien Gap, and it goes all the way through various highways to Alaska, right? So there's many people, but that's the famous Highway 1. That camp and that hotel are right on this highway, and the Chinese are filling up that camp that with American money we have built. Why was American money spent to build San Vicente Camp that's now filled with Chinese who are coming to the United States? Now, many of these Chinese actually skip the Darien Gap. And they go, and many people will say, often in a smart alecky voice, they would never do that because they would just fly in. Well, guess what? This is what we do for a living, and we know that. In fact, we know enough about it. I could talk about it for 2 weeks straight, right? But they do that. They do that. They come in as spies. They're physicists. They're engineers. They work in our government. They work in the FBI and the CIA, right? We have Chinese spies in the CIA. That's crystal clear, right? We all know that. They work at the NSA. You've got people working in Department of Homeland Security Intelligence that can barely speak English. I mean, you can't understand their English, right? Because they're native Mandarin speakers. That's how ate up we are. So the bottom line is a lot do come through the Darien Gap. Many also circumvent that, and they fly to Cancun or Mexico City first, and then they go on often they'll go on vacations in Cancun, and then they come and cross the border into the United States. For instance, here in Texas, I've met many of them crossing in Texas. I've met many crossing in Yuma, Arizona, many crossing California, or they fly in or whatever. Many come in undetected. Others will go to San Salvador. Others go to Managua. There's different ways they come in. Others are now, there's a huge Chinese embassy now in the Bahamas. Not a coincidence. Increased presence in Cuba. It goes on and on and on. Venezuela with the Russians and China. It's a long story. We can go on about it for hours. Likewise, the same. I was just in Georgia and Armenia. I mean the Georgia, the one that's next to Russia, the original Georgia, right? I was just over there, just came back from there. In Yerevan, the capital of Armenia, you'll see buses downtown that are carrying their passenger buses that are bought by CCP money, China, and it's got the Chinese Communist Party flag on it. When I talked with Armenians about that. The Armenians are like, yeah, you go on that bus to charge your phone, it downloads your data. And I said, well, do you charge your phone there? Like, well, you know, it's a convenient charger, you know? So, I mean, they know what's happening. And yet, you know, you can get on those buses that are flowing downtown. If you're in Yerevan now watching this, watch those buses go by you. You can see them constantly. And they've got the CCP flag and the chargers inside. So this is happening globally, right? And now the United States, many of these Chinese who are coming through, some are high-end guys. They're like very sophisticated. You're not going to necessarily know anything about them, who they are. They might be biologists or whatever, scientists, doctors, working for CIA or whatever. And others are less sophisticated. They're coming through the Darien Gap, and they're posting like Instagram of them going immediately to American gun ranges, right? Immediately. I mean, there's Instagrams out there, and they use WeChat a lot. Or WhatsApp. They're publishing these videos all, and they're sending these videos to each other all over the place, right? You can see them on Facebook. Chinese coming straight in, like, here I am going through Colombia. Here I am in Quito, Ecuador. Here I am in Copacabana, Colombia. Now we're in the jungle. Now we're in San Vicente camp. And now I'm at a gun range in Jacksonville, Florida, right? I mean, literally Jacksonville, Florida. I mean, you can't make up this stuff. And our government's not doing anything about it. Meanwhile, we've got things burning down all over the place, you know, and now who's doing that? I don't know. But I haven't seen any press conferences by the FBI saying they're looking into it. I mean, meanwhile, you know, we've got obviously political people being arrested day in and day out. You've seen what's happening in Georgia now with Trump and Giuliani and the rest. While the Chinese flood into the United States, that does not include the Russians, the Venezuelans, and so many others. There's many ecosystems that are coming in, right? There are huge numbers of Venezuelans, which is destabilizing Panama. Many of them are stopping in Panama. We've got Hezbollah. I mean, for instance, many of the Iranians who live in places like Venezuela, they speak Spanish fluently. Many were born in places like Venezuela. They're native. They don't just speak Spanish fluently. It's native, right? I mean, they grew up there, right? They've got the body language. They know it. They can totally pass as Venezuelans, and they do. And they have Venezuelan paperwork. There's no way to know who they are. So we have many of these ecosystems flowing through. It's not just the Chinese, not just Russians, of course, or people running from this or from that. And then we've got the weaponized Haitians coming in, right? Hey, I went down to Dominican Republic earlier this year. You know, it shares an island with Haiti. They built sort of a wall that might keep a Great Dane out. But I was on that wall between Haiti and Dominican Republic with Chuck Holton, and the Dominicans have kicked out like 160,000 Haitians, actually, because of so much crime that the Haitians are creating down there in Dominican Republic. Every step of the way, Colombia, Panama, Mexico, everybody's like, when the Haitians show up, a lot of violence happens. And we see that in Texas as well. These ecosystems, these separate, you know, I spent at least two-thirds of my life outside of the United States in more than 90 countries. I lived in Europe for more than 6 years, Middle East more than 5 years, Asia almost 20, right? So I'm all over the world constantly. And I realize a few things. One is not all fish can coexist in the same aquarium, right? Some just don't mix. If you look at the fish chart for your aquarium, you know, Filipinos can get along with practically anybody, right? You know? And then there's other, like Chechens. Once you get more than six Chechens, the Lithuanians will call that critical Chechen mass, right? They, you know, once you get more than six, you get the Chechen gang, that sort of thing. It's just the reality. You know, having spent, again, more than two-thirds of my life overseas, often like a year in India, a year in China, running around different parts of China, Tibet, whatever, a year in Nepal, all over Asia, right? Japan, I've written three books that are only in Japanese, that are about Chinese information war. Actually, I wrote them in English, but they're only for the Japanese market, attempting to wake up Japan about the severe information attack that Japan is under. China is clearly going to attack Japan at some point. And keep in mind, Japan is dependent on imports for their food. Japan, famine is endemic to Japan. Japan hasn't had a famine since World War II, but it's coming again. Rest assured, I was just in Japan again, looking at food issues and whatnot, and all over Japan, from Ishigaki Island all the way to the north and whatnot. they only create about 10% of the food that they need, right? They can easily be cut off by just sinking a few ships. And China is doing intense information war against Japan. What I'm talking about here, let's go back to the macro view, orbital view. Chinese Communist Party and the World Economic Forum are working overtime to destabilize the United States, Europe, and Japan, and everything that goes with it, and to take it. Now, the president of Panama, who is a globalist, is waking up to the reality that there's no seat for him on the ark, right? I mean, the Panama is being destabilized by this massive weaponized migration coming through, right? Many of them are staying in Panama. And as we see, there's water issues with the canal, which appear to be separate. Now, I get it. Some people say that's weather modification. It may or may not be. I don't know. But the bottom line is the canal does have water problems from Gatun Lake. So there's a huge amount of ships, that are stuck off both sides. And then there's a lot of ships going around. And then people are finding, and the United States trade is largely, we are not completely dependent on the Panama Canal, but it definitely is one of our chief blood flows, right? So in any case, I can go on about this for hours. If you have any specific questions, I'll try to address those.
Michael, I've got one question. You were talking about April 2022, April 2023, if I may. Because you've been all over and you've been doing this a while, when did this weaponization of migration start in earnest, according to your observations?
That is a subjective. My answer would be subjective. Okay. When did it really start in earnest? I mean, I started going to the Darien as soon as Biden was installed. I was in Washington during the so-called, inauguration. I flew straight to El Paso, right, because to look at the border there. And immediately people started to flood over because I suspected that's what would happen. I was there with Japanese journalist Masako Ganaha and Chuck Holton, actually. And then we flew to Darien, right, suspecting that those flows were already going through Darien, but they were a trickle. You know what I mean? They were, 100 here, 200 there, 50 today, 10 today. You know what? Now it's 72 hours ago, there were 6,000 people in just one of the camps. And then another camp, San Vicente, was filled with Chinese, right? So, and then there's other camps down there. There's quite a few other camps and different villages and whatnot. So, now that we're clearly, since Biden has been installed, the flow through the Darien Gap, they put in bigger tubing, let's say, they're actually, again, as of this morning, I learned that there's another route just opened up through the Darien Gap, which only takes a day and a half, right? And before, it could take you a couple of weeks to get through, at least a week. Huge death toll coming through before, like the mountain of death where so many people are falling off, and the three crossings on the rivers where so many people drown, not to mention the rapes and the murders out there from other aliens and from the Indians. Actually, the Indians I go out with do a lot of that. So there's firefights out there and that sort of thing. If you look up Darien Gap, you'll see it's often billed as one of the most dangerous places on Earth. And it is that. However, our Southcom, U.S. military, and others have been busy making this easier for people to come through. So now it's much safer, much faster, and the flows can increase. So now Panama, of course, is blaming Colombia for this, but it's not really Colombia that's doing it. It's the World Economic Forum and Chinese Communist Party are the principal drivers. Now they're doing this both directly and indirectly by increasing the human osmotic pressure by causing food problems. Again, food problems are something I look at in detail. I was with Jordan Peterson in Netherlands, for instance. I took him to a farm and set up some meetings for him, and went on a show talking about this a couple of times. And the food issue will become intense. It's very clear that we're going to go into massive famines. Now, several years ago, when I started warning about this, people would often say to me, "Don't you know the U.S. is the largest food exporter?" As if I missed that fact, right? Yeah, I get it, right? I totally get it, right? This is what I do. But for those who have studied famine, which I have in great detail over the years, interestingly, a lot of the places with the worst famines have the most food. Counterintuitive. Big parts of Ukraine that have had huge famines in the past, Ukraine's a breadbasket, or Henan province, not Hunan, but Henan province in China, breadbasket during Mao's time, had some of the worst famine. Ireland, why Ireland, famine is endemic to Ireland. I mean, they'll have famine again. I was there last year with, or was it this year? Last year with Mary Lou McDonald. She's the leader of Sinn Féin, which she's a total Marxist. All she wanted to do is talk about, you know, equity and equality and how she's speeding the flow of migration. And these, I was like, Mary Lou, I didn't come in to talk about, you know, all that inclusion stuff, food. And she's like, don't you know we export enough food for 25 million people, which is several times more than the people we have in Ireland. I'm like, I get it. I didn't just fly in for something that's simple. Most of your inputs, you know, when you've got an assembly line and food comes off the other end, there's other inputs that go at the beginning of the assembly line, such as nitrogenous fertilizers and other energies, right? Such as natural gas, which is needed to create the nitrogenous fertilizers, right? There's problems with those. For instance, I was at BASF twice last year. BASF is the biggest chemical company in the world. They started making nitrogenous fertilizers by the way, Mary Lou McDonald, all she wanted to talk about was the equity. And she's got an IQ of about 90. Ireland is in trouble. And, you know, you go up to that was in Dublin, but you go up to Belfast, and they've still got a wall between the Protestants and the Catholics that makes Trump's border wall, which is a pretty good wall. They make Trump's border wall look like a chain link fence. I mean, that, and Trump's border wall is a very good wall, by the way. I've been up and down huge amounts of it. But the wall, that wall between the Protestants and the Catholics is still there. And by the way, a huge amount of the famine from 1845 to arguably 1854, people argue about when it ended, but anyway, started roughly 1845. A lot of that had to do with Protestant versus Catholic stuff, by the way. It wasn't all about the potato blight from the fungus and that sort of thing, but that's a separate issue. But the bottom line is from Ireland, I flew over to Thailand and I asked to meet with Mark Hapisit. He's a former prime minister of Thailand and I know him, he's a friend. So I flew over and I said, you know, do you have time for coffee? Cause I'll fly in and I want to tell you something about some issues unfolding. So I'm in Bangkok now and I'm having coffee with Mark and the former prime minister of Thailand. I said, you know what? You may end up with, believe it or not, rice export issues. And he's like, Thailand, we're the huge rice exporter. You know this. I'm like, true. But rice basically is a vacuum for nitrogen out of the soil, right? And you imported 92% of your nitrogenous fertilizers last year, 5 million metric tons. And, you know, there's a problem. There's a global shortage of nitrogenous fertilizer, right? This is a big deal. Let me go back to BASF at Ludwigshafen, Germany. There's something called the Haber-Bosch process, right? The Haber-Bosch process is it's one of the most important chemical processes to all of humanity, right? That's the Fritz Haber was a German chemist who was credited with developing this process. He wrote a book on thermodynamics in 1903 in which he described a process in which you could take the hydrogen off of the natural gas and combine it with the nitrogen that we're breathing now and make ammonia, right? And with that ammonia, you could make fertilizer. Of course, the Germans and BASF always talk about how he helped develop the Haber-Bosch process to make fertilizer. It was also to make explosives, but that's a side topic, you know, ammonium nitrate and that sort of thing. So anyway, in 1908, after he published that book about 5 years before, I think he published it in 1905, actually, but he wrote it, I think, it doesn't matter, 1903. But the bottom line is he made a little bit of ammonia. Fritz Haber made a little bit of ammonia in 1908, but he didn't know how to make it industrial because it's a difficult process. So that's when Carl Bosch came along, another German chemist. And Carl Bosch then made it industrial at Ludwigshafen, Germany, at BASF, where I was at twice last year. So in about 1913-ish, they started developing this on an industrial scale in roughly 1915. Again, people are arguing that. But they started making nitrogenous fertilizers at Ludwigshafen, Germany. Remember what I'm telling you and look at your map. Ludwigshafen, Germany is on the Rhine River. Remember that. It's on the Rhine River. The Rhine River is sort of like the Mississippi of Europe. It's very important, right? It dumps out at Rotterdam. Remember Rotterdam, that I'm mentioning Rotterdam and Rhine River and BASF now. So I was in BASF twice last year, and I'm taking a tour, and I talked with the tour guy, and I said, hey, what happens if Nord Stream gets cut? And Nord Stream wasn't cut yet. And he said on my audio, or on an audio that somebody was making there, he said, well, then BASF is dead. And it's not dead. But then months later, Nord Stream was cut. Nord Stream is like an artery for Europe. I mean, it's very important. Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2. Nord Stream 2, of course, was pressurized but not flowing. But Nord Stream 1, most of that was, a lot of that was going to BASF to create nitrogenous fertilizers. Now, across Europe, due to that and other things, there is a huge diminishment of nitrogenous fertilizer production, ammonium sulfate, ammonium nitrate, and other things. And countries like Brazil are not getting enough. India, not getting enough. Now, Thailand, not getting enough. And the prices are going up. Places like Panama, the prices have gone up so much that now the prices are going back down for nitrogenous fertilizers due to demand destruction, because many farmers are going out of business because they can't afford it. So if you look at the price of nitrogenous fertilizers, you might go, hey, that's good news. The prices have been going down. But you look at the prices of food, not so much, because the bottom line is the food prices are not going down. You have riots, and look up actually Argentina. You can see there's riots this week, right? And so this things go on and on and on. This will create that human osmotic pressure, right? Now let's go back to that push and the pull of migration. Now, you know, with these food shortages, food prices going up. Now let's look at Netherlands, where I spend a lot of time. I was in Netherlands this March again for their latest elections. Netherlands is at the mouth of the Rhine River. That's where Rotterdam Harbor is. There was battles fought for that. For instance, in World War II, Rotterdam was key. And hold on, it's making the table shake. Okay. And Rotterdam is key. That's the mouth of the Rhine River where that fertilizer leaves from places like BASF, right? And now that's key because Netherlands is specifically targeted by the CCP and the World Economic Forum for takeover. Why? They're trying to build something called Tri-State City. Tri-State City will include most of Netherlands, part of Belgium, and a part of Germany. That's why they call it Tri-State. This is to be a smart city of 30 million people, right? And they need that farmland. The Dutch farmers own, well, it's decreasing daily, but about 62% of the farmland, arguably. But they're also taking out the fishermen to control both the food supply and to take that farmland that they need for the smart city. Now, the Netherlands is also being invaded by huge amounts of weaponized migrants who are taking jobs, who are working on the farms and that sort of thing. And so it's really causing a lot of problems. For this is the head that you want to take for to take Europe is Rotterdam Harbor and Antwerp. Antwerp Harbor is the second largest harbor in Europe. Both are in the top 10 in the world. So if you create Tri-State City that contains both of those harbors, you see where I'm going to? That's why I spend so much time in places like Netherlands and Panama and Japan, because it's these are key places. Now, there's a place in Netherlands called Groningen where there's a huge gas field. Again, I was there in March in Groningen. And Groningen has been under intense information war. You can often tell what your enemies are doing based on watching their information wars. Information war is the highest form of warfare. It's not the kinetics. It's not the Navy SEALs running around making sexy calendars. It's information war. That's where the biggest wars are fought. That's where you can tell what's going on. Not by watching where the SEALs are being deployed. That's nothing. Watch the information wars, right? That's where it's at. There's been an intense information war to shut down Groningen for years. I was there in March watching this and warning that Groningen is about to be shut down. Now, Nord Stream is already shut, right? And about 2 months ago now, the Dutch government announced they're shutting Groningen. Why? Why are they shutting Groningen? I mean, this is vital, right, for creating nitrogenous fertilizers, right? This means people will starve to death, and I mean down to cannibalism. I mean, we're not talking about you're going on a diet. There's just not going to be enough food, period, on planet Earth as these things develop, right? And so, interestingly, well, they're shutting it, and they know what they're doing. Now, the people who are not paying attention closely enough will say, they're so stupid. No, they're very smart. they're cutting you off. They're cutting off all these mechanisms, right? Not only do these natural gases, are they used to create nitrogenous fertilizers, they're used to create things like AdBlue, which is the, in Europe, it's called AdBlue. It's the diesel additive that's needed for these modern diesel trucks and other devices, you know, because there's a computer and a sensor that can sense whether or not you have the AdBlue in there or not. And if you don't have the AdBlue, if you don't have the, what do we call it in the United States? In Europe, it's called AdBlue.
DEF.
It's the diesel additive. That's right, DEF. And in Europe, it's called AdBlue. I spent a lot of time in Europe. So anyway, I have a friend in California. He's got a big contract now cutting these semi-trucks in half. These semi-trucks are in great condition that don't use the DEF in the United States. So he's got a big contract. I went there and I looked at this process, literally destroying the engines because they don't use DEF. They're getting control of us in many different ways, right? So Europe is clearly going to go into some serious food problems. Now, the Europeans who seem to think that they're highly educated are going to go into wars. They will clearly be going into wars. Look at France, what's happening now. The same will happen in the Netherlands. The same will happen in Germany. And by the way, I speak German. I went to DLI for German, and I lived there in Germany for 4 years. I lived in Poland for 2 years. I've seen that continent inside and out, and I still go back regularly, right, to look at the current situations. They will not make it. I mean, this is going into war. It's Camp of the Saints stuff on steroids. And so that's what we have going on in the United States. Likewise, Japan as well. I was just down on Ishigaki Island some months ago. If you look up Ishigaki on your maps, it's right beside Taiwan. It's part of Okinawa Prefecture. China has been running a very intense information war against Japan globally and within China. Like, I've gone to their museums inside China. It's just total about Japan hatred, you know. And now you go over to Japan, like Okinawa Prefecture, and you've got an information war trying to persuade the Japanese that they're actually Chinese and that they're actually second-class citizens to the rest of Japan anyway, and that they're treated badly. They've got the Okinawans now, some of the government people using an old dialect that's not really spoken much anymore in Okinawa, starting to open the business meetings with that old dialect. This is what they do. I saw the same in Morocco. We've seen the same. I saw the same in Nepal. I was there when the Maoists were doing their thing. I was there for a year in Nepal. The Maoists were trying to get everybody to speak their old dialects, right? And their old or their other languages. Instead of learning Nepalese or Hindi, they want everybody to speak Tibetan or whatever, right? And so it's very interesting how this same pattern. I was down in Colombia with one of the senators down there, Ria Cabal, and we were having lunch. And she said, Michael, they're trying to get all of our people in Colombia to speak their old languages. Why are they doing this? They're trying to get them to fight each other and fight us. I said, they're doing the same in places like Japan, trying to get the Ainu to break apart. You know, now everybody in Japan can, you know, basically say, I'm Ainu, you know, it'd be like me saying I'm Cherokee or something, right? You know, I'm obviously not, right? And but now you've got a lot of Japanese going, I'm Ainu, right? And so, you know, it's just divide and conquer. Likewise, they're trying to do the same down in Okinawa. Now, if you look at Ishigaki Islands, it's a few small islands down by Taiwan. It's the closest. It's sort of like Key West for Japan, right? Right by Taiwan. The Japanese just put a missile base there. They're very concerned, of course, that Taiwan will come under attack, which, you know, at some point. And it's just next to the Senkaku Islands as well, which are disputed by Taiwan, Japan, and China. All three of them claim that. Actually, Japanese-Taiwanese relations are very tight. They're like, they have like a love affair, you might say. They really get along very, very well. But what I talked with the mayor of Ishigaki along, again, with Masako Gana and Chuck Colton, and that mayor is very concerned that whenever there's eventual war with Taiwan, the Taiwanese are going to flood out in fishing boats to Ishigaki, right? And again, if you look at the map, you'll see what I'm talking about. It's right next to Taiwan. And then the 60,000 people on Ishigaki will have to move out to Honshu or other places, right? Or to other parts of, or just someplace, because they won't be able to stay there. And so on the Ishigaki Islands. And he's very concerned, the mayor of Ishigaki Island, the islands, that a lot of mainland Chinese will come in as well undercover on those fishing boats as military operatives, you know, like is coming through the Darien Gap right now. and other places, right? And so, yeah, these things are global. And the thing is as you travel around to places like Netherlands, you see the gas field at Groningen is now being shut. This is really important. But even when you talk with a lot of Dutch people, they don't get it. I was just in Groningen in March talking with people there, like a farmer. And he's like, yeah, they need to shut the gas field because this is causing small earthquakes. That's the information war. Is that as they pump the gas out of Groningen, it causes these micro earthquakes and it's caused cracks in people's farmhouses and that sort of thing. And it does. That's truthful. Most of the information wars are based on obviously based on truth, right? And so they can take people around and say, look, there's a crack in my farmhouse or whatever. And so, you know, this intense information war that, yeah, your houses are being destroyed so that the rest of the world can benefit. That's true. Your houses are not being destroyed, but for the, you know, there's been a proposal on the table, for instance, by the FVD party, Forum for Democracy, headed by Thierry Baudet, that they could build a new home for everybody in that Groningen area, a much bigger home for the money that, how important this is. I mean, it's just, but now they're shutting those information wars. So they did years of preparatory work to get those gas fields shut down. And now they're getting shut down. This is going to lead to, interestingly, by the way, Netherlands, most people probably know, is a lot of it is below sea level, right? Not all of it, but a lot of it, right? And so another interesting aspect of this battle is, oh, let me sidestep this for a minute. One of Bill Gates's daughters bought a horse farm in Netherlands, which is below sea level. I mean, if he really believed that place was going to be flooded, why would she have bought that big horse farm? Anyway, side topic. Now, they're introducing things like wolves to Netherlands, wolves. Now, before the wolves were released, well, actually, they say they came over from Poland, right? But anyway, they were released. But the bottom line is, before the wolves were released, and real wolves, right? The last time I was there in March, one got killed near my hotel. I got hit by a car on the highway about 500 meters from my hotel, a big wolf, right? But before the wolves were released, they passed a law to protect the wolves. And of course, many Dutch people are like, why would you pass a law to protect the wolves? There's no wolves here. And now they're there. And go ahead, sir.
Well, hey, Michael, I have a question, and this is critical because yesterday, you know, Japan sent a lot of their people to the shelters because they're worried about North Korea. So how do you see North Korea being used by the Chinese to pretty much provoke or take out Japan in the scenario that you're laying out? Because North Korea is getting more sophisticated militarily, and the North Koreans and Japanese hate each other too, correct?
Yeah, especially the North Koreans. North Koreans seem to hate basically everybody. They don't have any friends, including their South Korean compatriots. North Korea is like the one country on earth that doesn't seem to have any friends, right? So, and China obviously uses them to great effect. Funny, years ago, I was giving a speech in Tokyo, and it was a bunch of historians and journalists and that sort of thing. I said, you know, when I travel the world, I'm going to what you're talking about. I say, I ask certain questions like, what do you think of your police? What do you think of your army? What do you think of your courts? Is there justice here? Just basic questions. I'm like, which countries do you like? Which countries do you not like? And interestingly, I would say in my many years crisscrossing the world, the two most popular countries in the world are easily the United States and Japan. Despite that Americans seem to think that we're hated all over the place, it's actually not true. That actually our government often is quite detested, especially by Americans now. But Americans themselves actually are typically very welcome, and Japanese as well. And interestingly, that's true across Asia. And I've been to at least 25 Asian countries, right? I mean, all over the place. You know, so I was given this speech and I said, you know, Japan is hated by only three countries to my knowledge, but Japan is easily one of the top two most popular countries in the world. It's neck to neck with the United States. Despite what everybody sees in the news, that's information war. What are the countries that hate Japan? Everybody's like, Korea, you know, China. And I said, and they couldn't get the third one. They're like, oh, North Korea. And I said, okay, just combine the Koreas, okay? And they're like, yeah, they're at wit's end. I said, obviously it's Japan. And they almost gave me a standing ovation. I think that video is online. They were like, yeah, that's true. Japanese hate Japan. I was like, it's true. Same in Germany. Same in the United States. Nobody hates America more than a lot of Americans. And it's information war that's caused them, that, like, for instance, the war guilt program that we initiated after World War II really was very successful in causing Japanese to hate Japan. So, I mean, that has been built on by Chinese and others over the years to create hatred towards Japan by Japanese, right? That's information war. I was talking yesterday with Ann Vandersteel. You know, when I graduated from high school in the 80s, remember when geeks were not popular? Well, they're still not popular. Why would geeks be unpopular? I was kind of geek crowd, but jock. I was kind of a jock geek hybrid, right? And so it was quite interesting because most of my friends were more geeks, or they were either geeks or jocks, right? And I was like, I like the geeks. But now, as I get older and studied information war to great, for years and years, I've written three books on it. I deeply suspect the hatred of, or the fights back against the geeks is information war. You know, causing people not to want to study mathematics and engineering and history. You know, nobody should study these things. You should just be out drinking beer and smoking dope like an idiot. You know what I mean? It's like, you know. You know, the people with the pocket protectors they're trying to make them look like the bad guys. I mean, those are the guys that are either running the world right now or are working for the people that do. And I deeply suspect that's part of the information war. Similar has happened to Japan, is what I'm getting to. And the United States, we're a victim of our own information war at some point. But I could go on for hours. I'll try to answer your questions.
Well, I think, too, Doug, the thing that is critical. Michael, what percentage, just and you know, based on what you see, based on what you've been, are the politicians in the United States, whether the Democrats, Republicans, what Gary Haven said on the interview yesterday, you know, when he confronts people, he tells them if they don't, like Governor Abbott and the other people in Texas, if they do not do something about the child trafficking and the exploitation of children, then they're accessories to murder. What percent of Washington, whether it's Mayorkas, whether it's everybody and their dogs, Nancy Pelosevich, you know, Pelosevich, the what would I call it, the Bolshevik pronunciation of her name. The bottom line is, what percent of the political, if you will, hacks in the United States would you guess are on the Chinese payroll? Because, you know, listen, big tech went over there to ply their wares. So will you answer that? Because you're the only one that can answer it from a traveling, observer and seeing it in real life.
That is a good question that I ask myself daily. I mean, I don't know, because it's actually directly or indirectly. A lot of it's indirect, you know, on somebody else's payroll. And Gary Haven, that's a very serious man, as you well know, right? And he's very influential. He's influential mostly behind the scenes. That much is clear, right? And when he said those things yesterday, when he was on the show with us, I think Abbott needs to pay attention because that's high voltage coming right at him, right? You know, it is accessory to murder, right? But how many are actually on the payroll? I don't know. You know, on Monday, we took a helicopter over that Colonia north of Houston. I've arranged flights on different days. That one was flown again by David Cannon, a patriot that lives in that area north of Houston. He's got a helicopter. I asked David to fly some congressmen on Monday over this giant Colonia north of, I'm getting to your question, north of Houston, called Colony Ridge. They actually call it Colony Ridge. It's a development for 200,000 people, right? So the two congressmen that we flew were Congressman Brian Babin and then Morgan Luttrell, the brother of the other SEAL and Luttrell. They were both SEALs, right? And so Morgan showed up. Crenshaw did not show up. And we flew them and some others over the Colonia on Monday. Morgan Luttrell. Interestingly, his assistant asked me when we were offline, who is behind me? Who funds me? And I thought that an odd question, just the way she was asking it. And it made me immediately think, you know, it was just an odd question. As if, and I'm immediately thinking, that's a question that somebody would ask who's actually bought, You know what I mean? The way she asked it, somebody was sitting beside me at the table and what was over, like, did you see the way she asked that question? I was like, it wasn't missed by me. I mean, that's the question of like somebody is like, what kind of drug do you use? You know what I mean? I don't use any, actually. You know what I mean? But why is it on your mind? You know what I mean? I'm flying you over the Colonia because I'm American and our country's being destroyed. I got kind of aggressive with her, actually. I said, you know, where are you coming from with this? You know, I'm not impressed by all the SEAL stuff, I told her. You know what I mean? I'm not impressed. I'm tired of the arrogant SEALs. I'm tired of the, you know, Morgan strutting around like a peacock. You know, what are you going to do about the Colonia, right? And guess what? Morgan's getting money from the developer. And I'm telling you this, I almost said it on Alex Jones' show yesterday. In fact, I almost called him, but we didn't have the time left. You know, call him on the phone and say, Morgan, why are you getting money from that Colonia, the developer from the Colonia? You're getting the money from him, right? Yeah, you know, you're not going to do anything about the Colonia. You're not interested in the children. You're just another bought and paid for stooge, right? Big SEAL. Big deal. Big deal, big SEAL. Where was Crenshaw? He wasn't there either, right? You're bought and paid for. I'm
absolutely
not.
Absolutely.
And Vanderstil's not bought and paid for, right? I mean, we're playing hardball. We don't care. There's nothing you can do, right? Gary Haven's not bought and paid for. He's got high voltage, right? He sees what's going on, right? There's a lot of us see. There's millions of us that see what's going on. What are going on, and we're not bought and paid for SEAL whores, right? I'm tired of this stuff. There was one SEAL that wanted me to take him down to the Darien Gap. He called me up drunk. I said, I'm not taking you to the Darien Gap, right? You don't call me drunk, right? Telling me how you're going to run the Darien Gap. He's a congressman up in Wisconsin now, right? What is it with these SEALs that become they become congressmen and suddenly they're like famously being bought out? I'm getting tired of it. And, you know, I'm saying it right now. It's the first time I've said it publicly right now. You know, that what happened on Monday with Morgan Luttrell, I'm sick of this stuff. And I'm not going to be quiet about it. He's lucky we didn't light him up yesterday with
Alex. Yeah.
We just didn't have the right moment.
Well, that lady was obviously gathering intel. And, you know, again, what they don't understand about someone like you, and this is knowing your position and knowing what you're doing, is you can't be bought. And so they're trying to figure out a way to basically marginalize you or shut you up. The only question I have is it's too bad the helicopter had a door that didn't open. I'm saying that, not Michael Yon. You know what I'm getting at. I would say this, when a blatantly non-professional tries to interrogate, it's insulting, you know, and that's when you get the idea that, and I don't know the total, if you would call that flight you guys took a success, but the point is that, you know, you cannot overcome bribes. You can't. You just can't overcome bribes. So the people that are asking questions like that or messing with you in the background, they know you're effective, because when you, as an American, speak to the American population, you're making points. Because in my opinion, few exceptions, all politicians are liars. So what you're doing is confronting the most pathologically sick liars in the universe, you know. And the bottom line is that what you're telling people is a reality. It's a reality check. It's a reality check. And, you know, the thing that I think people don't understand, it's beyond the information wars. You said something very important. The data that's getting out there, at some point, the preponderance of evidence will demand everybody act up, speak up, stand up, and hold those political, my word, bastards responsible. And see, that's the thing. Everybody thinks if they don't look, it goes away, until somebody like you says it's not going away. And, you know, I think people are going to be very surprised that in every community of stature in the United States of America, there are Chinese imports. And these are CCP soldiers. And, you know, you flood the market, flood the country with, you know, a bunch of people. Oh, those are just Chinese immigrants. But they have been here. They're here in every aspect. And again, I think, Michael, I'm going to turn right back to you, but that's a very telling real-world illustration of trying to interrogate you. And I would have told, and maybe you did, You don't have to say what you said to her, but the bottom line is that's insulting, but it's also so illustrative of someone who's so far removed from reality that her agenda is just like a controlled narrative, becomes a contained narrative, and that's what you shake up. You destroy the controlled narrative. Thank you. I mean that. Thank you.
You're most welcome. And it's quite clear that Morgan Luttrell is just not smart enough to be a congressman. He's on the level of AOC. Seriously. Yep. He's on the level of that Somali woman, whatever her name is, right? That married her brother. I mean, that level of people are they're basically little meat puppets, right? Oh, I'm a big SEAL, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, I get it. I'm impressed. Big deal. You know what I'm saying? You know, yep. People need to get stop being enamored with, oh, we're gonna put another SEAL in charge, right? Oh, yeah, big deal. We're putting this lady in because she's from Somalia or something. It's all this identity politics, including SEALs, because they have name recognition, right? And you need to earn it every single day, no matter what your background is. Every day is selection, right? SEAL selection's over, and now you're not making this selection. You don't know what's going on the border, or you don't care, or you're bought. You don't care about what's happening at the Colonia. You don't care that these kids are in warehouses, for instance, in Brownsville, Texas, at the old Walmart Supercenter, which is right downtown, right? I mean, it's right in front of everybody. It's not hidden. These aren't things like in the Darien Gap where it's going to kind of you have to take my word for it, or you have to go down there yourself. You can go to Brownsville. If you're in Brownsville watching this, drive on over and try to go to the front door, see how far you get, right? Look at the full parking lot at Brownsville at that old Supercenter. It's right across from McDonald's. Those kids don't get out and see the light of day much. Just wait there all day and see how many kids come out. They're stuck in that super center, right? Why are they stuck there? We've got, it's unbelievable. I was just talking with the Idaho Senate this morning, just before I came on with you. You know, these children, they are being escorted by people out of these super centers to places like Orlando, Florida and Jacksonville, Florida. They're flown out often at nighttime, sometimes on United flights, on normal flights. United. That's right, United. United, the one that breaks guitars. They are flying these children, right? And they're flying them knowingly. They're knowingly doing it, right? Now, they can sue me. They got billions. I get it. Do it, please, because that'll make this even bigger, because I will be able to demonstrate it with all the videos and all the proof and all the statements from your own employees, right? You knowingly are transporting these children from places like McAllen and Harlingen over to Jacksonville and over to Orlando and other places, right? And they're being transported also at nighttime on charter flights, right? They are being flown out from many places, and the escorts are often 19, 20, 21 years old. To be an escort for these children, you have to be at least 19 and get a GED. This is told to us by insiders, right? And, which I can introduce to you, and you can get them on your show. This is very interesting. We have addresses. We have over 8,600 addresses. Some of those addresses are near me here in Austin, right? In Austin, Texas. Others are in Orlando, Jacksonville, Tampa, all over the place. That's just from a 4-month period from one facility. We have over 8,600, right? That's unbelievable. So these escorts take these children out of the facilities, one escort for 5 children. If they're escorting 10 children, it'll be 2 escorts, we're told by the witnesses. And often they are only like 19 or 20 year old escorts, escorting like, you know, 15 year old girls. I mean, that sort of thing, right? And it'll be actually male escorts with female and male children, right? So sometimes they get, according to the witnesses, they get held over because a flight's canceled or whatever, and it's not a direct flight. They have to stay in a hotel. So the escort is told he's got to sleep on the couch while the children sleep in the bed. So, yeah, how's that going to play out? Then often these children are picked up at baggage claim at places like Orlando International Airport, or they're picked up at Jacksonville at baggage claim by people who are sometimes drunk. They're often and the other escorts who are old enough to rent cars. Those are the ones who are used to rent cars and drop them off at homes, often at affluent homes, at hotels. We've been watching one of the places here in Austin. Somebody's been watching it for us since we got that address. It's very interesting, right? I mean, that's not a hotel that they're watching. It's an apartment building. But the point is these things are all over the place, right? And So who are these people that are accepting these children? I asked one of the witnesses, what happens when you, do you ever lose a child? And he said, yes, sometimes a child, not very often, but sometimes we just lose a child. I'm like, how do you get all these kids to the airport without, you know, thousands and thousands of kids? You must lose one now and then. He said, yeah, and not often, but sometimes they get lost and you'll get fired for that. I'm like, fired? I mean, there are, nobody knows who these kids are. I mean, they're coming in from over the border. Both witnesses that we've interviewed most recently, we had one on the Alex Jones show yesterday, Tara, and after introduced you to Tara. And they both have talked about children crying at night in these facilities. They want to go back to their home countries and back with their parents. They're here without their parents. How did they get here, right? And where are they going? Where are they now? I mean, you know, we say there's some 85,000 or whatever missing, but nobody knows how many are really missing. Nobody, many of the people that are being brought in, are, we just don't know who they are. And the Border Patrol, they're just doing their job, sir. You know what I mean? Just doing my duty, right? I mean, you know, I mean, the Border Patrol, there's a lot of serious patriots there. The border, nobody leaks more than Border Patrol. I've never seen an organization, they're like a dam that's broke. Because they, there are many patriots that are incredibly upset. And they don't like this. They hate it. But they still are loading the buses, right? They're still loading the trains, so to speak. Now I see. That, go
yeah,
ahead, sir.
Yeah, I call that the Nuremberg defense. I saw it again. We're just following orders. We watched it in Maui. We're watching it in Canada. We're watching it. You're watching and sharing with all of us that it's on the border. You know, the Nuremberg defense, you know, with mass murders was we were just following orders. Those are some of the most dangerous words in history, and they're being repeated again. And basically, yeah, you know, I mean, there are good people, obviously, but when you've got the head of all these organizations being accessories to mass murder, and that's what they are, or facilitating some of the most horrific, by anybody's moral standards, you know, bottom line is that they are incredibly evil. And I think that's one of the things, Michael, that you and others that you're bringing down to the border and the Darien Gap, you're showing people the real face of evil. But the most heartbreaking part is our government is funding, facilitating, and absolutely collecting on the other end. Specific politicians are becoming incredibly wealthy, and at the we're literally out of the Book of Revelation. We traffic in men's souls. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you know, if these children are worth money per day, right? They're valuable as prostitutes. They're valuable as whatever, right? But they're also money per day when they're kept in these camps and these facilities, right? The money comes from the government, right? So where does this money flow to? It's money per day. So the more children you can bring over the border, and the DNA testing is not being done now, right? So this is a huge, I mean, this is literally the new product. And that former Walmart Supercenter, the product now is not lawn care, it's children, right? I'm not saying Walmart owns it. I don't know who's benefiting from the real estate deal there. And so I'm not making that allegation at all. I'm just saying it's the old Walmart Supercenter in Brownsville. You can go see it, right? And the parking lot is filled with workers, and you won't be able to get close to it. As soon as you show up, the guys with the antennas are out. They're very aggressive. They'll be aggressive with you and that sort of thing. And why isn't the county sheriff hitting that with the SWAT team or the local police and going in and rescuing those children? Why aren't these congressmen down there at the front door, right? I mean, this is overt. I was down in McAllen recently with McAllen, Texas, with Ann Vandersteel, when so-called Governor Abbott came and gave a small business summit at the DoubleTree Hotel, which that hotel is completely filled with law enforcement. It's filled with Florida highway patrolmen all the way from Florida, game wardens, and everybody else that are on the border and doing their thing, right? And it's an expensive hotel, completely filled up. Look at the parking lot. All the cars are law enforcement and that sort of thing, right? And so he spoke, and the Governor Abbott's so-called, I call him the WEF, the World Economic Forum sector chief for Texas, actually. He's not really, he's not behaving as the governor of Texas, right? And he's out there talking about how the economy is doing so great in McAllen. Of course, why is he in McAllen so often? People keep asking. We can get to that. But he's talked, he didn't say a thing about the border. McAllen's right on the border, right? It's at the border. And he didn't say a thing about the border, didn't say a thing about the Texas electrical grid, which is in dangerously shambles. We saw what happened with the with the freeze, and that, you know, knocked most of the state out and, you know, caused people to die and freeze to death. And bottom line, why does he go to McAllen so much? Well, why do I go to McAllen? Why do I go to Panama and Japan and Netherlands and these key places so much? Well, McAllen happens to be, or RGV, the Rio Grande Valley, which is where McAllen is, happens to be another key place for the World Economic Forum, creating that corridor that goes to Canada, right? I-69 corridor. And the World Economic Forum, guess what? They have a headquarters in Detroit, which is right on that highway, right? Yeah. See, they're trying to take control of the Great Lakes, right? And that corridor. And that he's always down in Abbott's going, he goes to McAllen frequently. That is the corridor. Brownsville Port's right there. SpaceX is there. I think SpaceX is there for different reasons. It was historical reasons that Elon Musk bought it because a guy already had a facility there. An amateur rocket man had a great facility for launching rockets, and that's how Elon Musk ended up there. But all these things together, and keep in mind this. The corridor has been a NAFTA thing anyway. It's a natural corridor. Many of these things they're not like somebody made it up one day, like Netherlands will be a key terrain. It's the reason why Poland always gets invaded. It's flat and it's easy to invade through, right? You know, and likewise with Netherlands, it's at the end of the Rhine River, right? Which is like the Mississippi for Europe. And that's where Rotterdam Harbor is, the biggest harbor in Europe, one of the top 10 in the world, right next to Antwerp Harbor, right? Also, one of the top 10 in the world, the two biggest in the world. The reason these places are key terrain is because they're key terrain, like Hawaii. Why was this fire in Lahaina? I've been looking for places where these globalists will go when these big meltdowns inevitably occur. Islands, of course, right? Why did Bill Gates take a big vacation in recent times down in Panama, in Costa Rica? Coincidence? Maybe. I mean, you know, Panama's key terrain. Partly because of the Panama Canal, which is absolutely vital. And also, even if without the canal, Panama is still key terrain because it's an invasion route for the entire world to go a Camp of the Saints type thing. All you got to do is get your feet into South America anywhere, from Tierra del Fuego to Brazil to anywhere, Quito, Ecuador, anywhere you can get your feet. Caracas, if you can get your feet into Cartagena, you can get your feet into Minnesota, right? You can get your feet anywhere in South America, from there on, it's easy. You have to go through the Darien Gap, which is now a day and a half walk. Then you get on a bus near San Vicente Camp or Las Blancas Camp, and then you go to Costa Rica, and then you'll end up about a week later, depending on the breaks, in the United States. That's it. And if you're a child, you may be taken from your parents or whomever. Often they're not coming with their parents. That much is clear. And you may be put into the former supercenter at Brownsville. And you may be now human meat that's traded on the market for dollars per day. And you may be put in these other camps that are all over the place. For instance, Pecos. I have a friend out there looking at that closely right now, which I've actually been there before as well. There's camps all over the place for these children. Not just the children, but the adults as well. Now, keep in mind, U.S. military and police forces are now recruiting directly from these people that just came over the border who are not citizens, right? Think about that. You can end up with Haitian death squad police forces that quick. And they'll have total access to all the computers, all the databases, all the radios, all the gear, all the cars, and the law and the judges behind them. This is no joke, right? We're looking at an actual war that will be kinetic. It will not. Remember, often these information wars are the prelude to a kinetic war. And that's what's happening. We're being overwhelmed. Netherlands and Europe the same way. France, UK, everywhere I go. Greece. You know, the Greeks, I was over in Greece, I don't know, a couple of years ago or so, looking at that. And the Greeks are like, you know, they're coming in. They're cutting down 400-year-old olive trees for firewood. You know, that sort of stuff. You know, they're very angry. Japanese, of course. Now, I'm getting reports daily now from Japan about how the Turks and the Kurds are starting to fight within Japan. I love the Kurds, and I like the Turks. I spent a lot of time in Turkey and out with the Kurds in northern Iraq and that sort of thing. But they fight. If you get Kurds and Turks somewhere or Kurds and Arabs somewhere, it's the fish in the aquarium thing. Some fish don't mix well in the same aquarium. You get a bunch of Kurds, and the Kurds start fighting Kurds, and the Kurds start fighting Turks and Arabs, and it's just – it always happens. And so now it's causing political problems for Japan with Turkey, right? And that's why I keep, when I talk with, you know, Japanese leaders and that sort of thing, I'm like, close your borders, right? You know what I mean? Let me in, but close them for everybody else, right? But you know what I mean? But not really close completely, but you know what I'm saying? It needs to be sharply controlled because you will be overwhelmed and you're going to end up with food shortages. I mean, Japan is so easy to cut off on food. It's like cutting off, you know, a water spigot. It's child's play to cut off Japan. Sink about a dozen ships and your food will stop flowing because the insurance companies will not insure the ships and the ships are not going to get their ships sank by the Chinese, you know, Navy, right?
Well, a good example, too, is Maui. Maui, you know, the Hawaiian citizens got $700. But the FEMA people, 1,000 of them are staying in $1,000. This is open source. $1,000 a night, five-star hotels. Five stars and $700. And, you know, living in the islands, you're dependent on shipping. And now with the situation going on Maui, it's a great microcosm of the whole picture. The wealthy will eat well and everybody else will be starved to death. And again, the global food shortage, and it is manipulated because obviously when you're burning the forests in Canada, you're burning what's going on in California or flooding it or, you know, all of the food and the recalls are food recalls, Michael, they're off the chart. Never in the history of the United States has a major food recall with no evidence. And everybody forgets every single food production run, if it's canned, if it's packaged, frozen, has a lot number. So if one, you know, and it's easy to test. But again, everything is being cut off from the American people, including their length of time that we all have to have data presented to us by you and by others. So, you know, I think people better understand it. We're turning into a starvation nation. Go ahead, sir.
You know, Hawaii would be a nice place for somebody with a lot of weapons and a lot of food production that, you know, Hawaii can produce a lot of food if you have fewer people, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's been the cattle state before, I mean, relatively speaking, and, you know, and that sort of thing. But they'll reduce the number of people. Actually, there's a lot. I've been to Hawaii quite a lot all over the place. I love that place. But they do import most of their food as well, right? Which would not be a problem if they just reduce the population and keep it for the rich and, you know, keep it for, you know, the Oprahs of the world, right? And the bottom line is that's what they're working to do. Now, a lot of these globalists, they don't realize that they don't have a seat on the ark, right? They will end up fighting each other. For instance, the Chinese Communist Party and the World Economic Forum clearly will eventually fight, right? Because right now they have, it's like ISIS, you know, combining forces with Al-Qaeda. You know, those guys will fight each other. And they do, right? But you see, for instance, the Chinese Communist Party, you know, I was there, by the way, for 7 months in Hong Kong before they kicked me out. The police took me to the airport and basically shut the door on the airplane. You can see video of me confronting one of the police chiefs on the street in Hong Kong during the fighting. And I'm calling him a traitor because he's British. He's one of the senior police chiefs, right? And he actually says on the video went completely viral. So it's up online. He goes, I'm just doing my job.
Yep.
Like you. Everybody, the Hong Kongers are well-educated people. They're like, he just said it. Nuremberg, like you said, you know, Nuremberg defense. He said it right there. There was film crews all around when that happened. So there's multiple people with video that put it up and went completely viral. He's like, just doing my job. And I'm calling him the British traitor. Why are you selling out to the Chinese Communist Party? Because a lot of the senior police chiefs in the different parts of Hong Kong were British. And they're actually Hong Kong policemen. But they're holdovers. Now they're senior levels, right? So either he is an actual traitor or he's a spy maybe for the British, in which case I'm sorry for insulting you, sir. But, you know, maybe he's a spy within the Hong Kong police. I don't know. Or maybe he's both. I have no idea. But I know I saw them beating down Hong Kongers in front of me on a daily basis. I was in over 100 of their major protests. I mean, you should see some of my live streams. Molotov cocktails coming in like shooting stars. I mean, like 1833 shooting stars. You know what I mean? When they had the big meteor shower, the huge one. I mean, it was thousands of them one night. There must have been 2,000 Molotovs one night. Many of those on my live streams. It was very serious. They were resisting as well as they could. But the Hong Kongers, again, are cut off from food and water. They're dependent on China. They're dependent on imports. I mean, China had their throat, right? And one of the things that China had done for years is, you know, most of the native Hong Kongers are Cantonese speakers, of course. So they had been sending, the mainlanders had been sending about 100 to 150 a day is the working number that the Hong Kongers always use. Mainlanders, Mandarin speakers in for years and years and years. So slowly they send them into key parts of Hong Kong. They got them into key positions in the schools and that sort of thing. Started rewriting the history books. And as, you know, like they do in Japan and the United States and other countries. And seizing control of the history books is vital key ground, right? And so seizing control of the history books, trying to force the children, teaching them that it's low, only uneducated people speak Cantonese and that sort of thing, which some of the most educated in the world. Most educated people in the world are Cantonese speakers, and they don't even speak English. I mean, those people are really well-educated, a lot of the Hong Kongers, right? I mean, they're known for that. And, of course, Taiwanese are mostly Mandarin speakers, but those two countries in Japan, you know, obviously well-educated people. Hong Kongers are over the top with education, and they're mostly Cantonese speakers. But they're teaching the children you shouldn't speak Cantonese, or they talk down to people who speak Cantonese in their stores and that sort of thing. And so they're slowly, they'll get the children, they'll give them scholarships to go over to places like Beijing to go to their schools and teach them their version and recruit them as spies.
I think you made an important point, because the Chinese model that you're experiencing in Hong Kong when they escorted you to the door of the aircraft, I mean, I was told this by people who were, they got fed up, but I was told that, you know, when China took back obviously Hong Kong, that all law enforcement was compromised and became nothing more than the arms, if you will, or the wrists of the Chinese Communist Party. And now we're seeing the same thing, because how many of the Chinese police stations in every place you travel, I mean, they claim they're doing that to keep track of their own people. But no, they're claiming that because they're going to take over all law enforcement on local levels where they established. And sure, like you said, they can take down the sign, but how many? I mean, is that not one of their standard battlefield plans to put placements of their, you know, police stations in the specific places they intend to occupy?
Oh, and they terrify Chinese down in Australia. I mean, I've gone down to Australia working on this information issues and information war issues, and they terrify Chinese in New York and across the United States and Europe, because in Japan, because they are afraid they'll get kidnapped. For instance, I have an office in Thailand. They've kidnapped Hong Kongers out of Thailand, not Taiwan, Thailand, right? People often confuse us too. Thailand. They kidnapped them, and they didn't hide it. They kidnapped these booksellers from Hong Kong. They were selling books about, you know, how corrupt the Chinese Communist Party was. I went to their bookstore. It's closed now. It's up these narrow stairs in Hong Kong, and everywhere is downtown Hong Kong, basically. But and they were, you know, shut down the bookstore. They were off in Thailand and got kidnapped and sent over to China. So, you know, people are terrified. They'll get kidnapped. They'll get killed. You know, they'll be, you know, because look, let's say Ireland. How many people have been kidnapped out of Ireland over the years? I mean, Irish, you know, I wonder how many Irish woke up one day in like 1854 and then, you know, suddenly they're on a boat, you know, and they're a deckhand. Now they're in New York, you know, rolling barrels of whiskey down the streets of New York. They've been kidnapped. That's been happening to children and adults around the world for centuries and centuries at a minimum, like the Portuguese going to Japan and kidnapping Japanese in Japan. Like, that's enough. They shut Japan, right? You know, that sort of thing. But now the mainland Chinese are doing that as well. They're terrifying people with these police stations. They're terrifying people with their, you know, trying to look omniscient and omnipotent, you know, with their presence everywhere. I was meeting with some members of the Panamanian government earlier this year down in Panama, and I asked, where's the Chinese police station in Panama City? And one of the guys who should know actually didn't know. He said, there's no Chinese police stations here. I said, there actually is. I said, I haven't found it yet, but there's definitely one here. I know there's one here. And, I mean, you got a Confucius Institute. We've been to that. right? You got a Confucius Institute. And by the way, I was one of the very first attacking Confucius Institutes. I started attacking them in 2014, right? Confucius Institutes are huge recruitment tools. There's one in Panama City. Of course, they're going to draw in the children of the elite. There's Confucius Institutes all over the United States and in Europe. Confucius Institutes, they'll come in and they'll offer a big university, all the top universities. Hey, we'll give you, you know, X amount of money per year. We'll send a couple of professors over to teach Chinese. We'll teach Mandarin. We'll teach Chinese history and these sorts of things. And go look at the Confucius Institute's teachers at these different places. Always pretty young women, that sort of thing. And here's the thing. Actually, the FBI, back when they would do their job, they did a nice documentary called Game of Pawns. Look up Game of Pawns. They never mention, you look it up on YouTube and share this with all the young people in university. They never mention on that Game of Pawns documentary about Confucius Institutes, but basically there's this is a true story based on a true story. There's a young American student who is offered a scholarship. He goes over to China, right? So he's in China and he's learning to speak Mandarin and that sort of thing. He likes languages and they start getting him to write papers for them. Tell us what you think about Chinese history. This is one of the grooming processes, right? And this is based on a true story. The guy ended up in prison. The American young man ended up in prison. So, you know, he's interacting with all these pretty young Chinese girls. Of course, everybody in your ecosystem is going to be a spy, right? And so, at one point he's like, my visa's running out. I got to go back to America. And they're like, you know, of course they're wanting him to go back to America. And they're like, you know, why don't you apply for the Department of State, which he fails the Department of State test because it's a hard test. And he comes back. Yeah, he's like, I failed the test. Right. And they're like, well, why don't you take the test for the Central Intelligence Agency? So he goes and passes that test because it's easy. And now he's going back for the polygraph. Right. So he's taking the polygraph test and then he freaks out. And anyway, one thing leads to another. They already were on to him, right? He had already smuggled, I think, $30,000 back and that sort of thing. And his dad had paid off his house with it. He had left a smoking trail, right? And ended up in jail. And so he's at the end of that. Basically, the bottom line is you know, they have these Confucius Institutes in universities across and community colleges across the United States, Canada, Europe. A Canadian counterintelligence guy warned about it maybe in 2016. I started attacking them in 2014. And they will offer you scholarships. One of my family members, I was talking with her on the phone and I was asking her how university is going. She's like, great. I asked her if you're studying any languages now. And she's like, yeah, I'm studying Mandarin. I'm like, obviously my antenna go up. I'm like, oh, have they offered you any scholarships? And she said, yes. And I said, to go back to China? Yes. So I'm like, okay, ceasefire. Do not accept that. I'll be flying back to the United States soon for a family briefing, right? You know, none of my family is going to end up being a Chinese spy, right? I mean, but that's what they're trying to do. They'll get you over there. They'll groom you. They'll get you in all kinds of videos, doing all kinds of things, drugs, girls, boys, whatever. They're going to preferably get you doing something that's, you know, highly illegal, highly embarrassing, and then they're going to highly own you, and then you're going to be placed into you're going to be a native born American who is now in the CIA or in the Department of State or whatever. That's one of the ways they do it. One of many.
Wow. I cannot believe how quickly this time has gone. Michael Yon, I want to thank you so much for your time. I know you're one of the busiest guys on earth. I appreciate you coming in, Steve. I appreciate you as well. Folks, I want you to dig deep and underwrite the workings of the hardest working guy on the planet, Michael Yon. Go to michaelyon.com, dig deep, underwrite his missions, support his missions through the multiple platforms. Do that right now, okay? Because that's what's going to keep this information flow going. Again, Mr. Yon, thank you so much. Steve, you can close it out.
Well, again, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the most important podcasts, I believe, that Doug has ever done. And I would encourage everyone, as Michael did, to watch the InfoWars presentation yesterday. Amen. Were where everybody was on. Gary Haven was on with Mike. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is the presentation to the world. And that's why guys like Michael are trying to say, wake up, people, wake up. And it's not a question of future tense. Remember, when they say they're just doing their job, in my opinion, that makes them a future executioner. Michael, thank you.
God bless you. God bless you both.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, sir. All right, folks, that'll do it. Have a great day.